The Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts for the day, Jonathan Larson of the University of Kentucky. These are my friends, the bug friends.
I am one of the bug friends. My name is Jody Green. I am with the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
And I guess I'm the last bug friend today, Michael Scavarla of Penn State.
We need a color code scheme or something. Like, I want us to be like Power Rangers. I want to be Blue Bug Squad member, and Jody should be like Aquamarine Bug Squad member or something.
Do we get giant robots in that can form a humanoid fighting machine?
Do I get my scorpion tail that I've waited for all this time?
Yeah, you can have a scorpion tail.
And you can get your hawk wings, Mike.
Oh my gosh, I would love to fly. That would be so cool.
They have to be bug-themed things, so maybe he can have like Neuropterin wings or something.
Ooh. Well, what about Beetle Elytra?
Okay.
Because, like, that gives you the added protection on the back, too.
There you go. See?
What would you have?
Oh, boy. Like a bug suit power? I would have Bombardier Beetle powers with my suit.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Although, you would have to be constantly farting on people, which might be awkward.
That seems like a win-win to me. This is very silly. We are being silly. But we have a show for you. It's not all going to be me talking about using farts as crime-fighting superpowers. We're going to get together today and talk a little bit about something that I think we've all gotten questions on in the past, about Chagas disease and kissing bugs. I know that when I started here at Kentucky, that I got three or four of these questions right away. I started in August last year, and it seemed like it was very rapid. People were asking me about this, and they had concerns about it. What are your experiences with Chagas and kissing bugs and getting inquiries about them?
I've had a few. It's normally that people find it and they think that they have a kissing bug, but they don't realize that there are other bugs that may look like it. But I have yet to see one, actually, a sample brought to me. So it's kind of wah-wah. Sorry, not fun.
Yeah, similar. I get spikes in the fall when there's Western conifer seed bugs around, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. And there's other spikes during the year when other kissing bug-like bugs or looking bugs are out and active, so people mistake those for kissing bugs. And I've linked a couple spikes in requests for me to individual news stories, because the same Chagas in the U.S. story keeps getting recycled by various local and national news sources. And a couple times, like, people have told me, like, oh, yeah, I saw it in the news, and then other people will cite that same story, so that's happened a couple times as well. So I get quite a number. I had 2 to 4 dozen requests a year, like specifically about kissing bugs and Chagas.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about maybe why it is that there can be so many news stories and why people are so interested in this. Maybe why it's so contagious, this interest in Chagas disease. What is Chagas disease? Can we talk a little bit about the pathogen and about the presentation of symptoms?
Well, I think for entomologists, it's a disease that's caused by a parasite that is transmitted to animals through an insect vector, and that's how we get involved.
Chagas is caused by Trypanosoma cruzi, which is it's actually related to the Trypanosoma that causes sleeping sickness in Africa as well, which is also another arthropod-borne disease. It's primarily endemic to Central and South America. There are millions of people in those areas that are infected with it. It's actually thought that Chagas may have killed Darwin, actually, when he may have picked it up during his trip on the Beagle. And that's the thing about Chagas is, while it can be acute fairly quickly, it can also just have this long tail of effects and just affect you decades after getting it.
They say that millions of people probably have it and they have no idea, because it's just been hidden in their bodies for so long. So they go into like a chronic phase.
Yeah. And up to 45% of people in that chronic phase will develop heart problems. But that could be anywhere from 10 to 30 years after the initial infection. Other things are an enlarged esophagus, an enlarged colon. Up to 10% of people can experience nerve damage. And it can eventually kill you through some of these symptoms. But like I said, it can be a long time after the initial bite. So not only can it be lethal in the long term, but it can also cause this decline in the quality of life as some of these symptoms slowly develop over a number of years.
Yeah. And I think since we're big on illnesses and viruses and diseases, it's like Chagas is the disease. Trypanosoma cruzi is the pathogen. And it can be in wildlife, so a lot of animals. And then, so not necessarily will the animals like skunks and armadillos get the disease. They will harbor the pathogen, but dogs and humans can display the disease. The kissing bug can be the vector that goes between the reservoirs or the different hosts. And so there's a lot coming into play. And so not all bugs will have the pathogen. So not, you know, and not all animals will display the disease. And as Mike said, there are different phases of the disease. I know that some of the acute phases, I always see pictures of like a swollen eye. And then like many other symptoms, it's like the fever, the rash, headaches, aches, all the things we hear all the time with like tick-borne diseases or even like COVID, right? Like the fatigue and flu-like symptoms. I think that's when the parasite is in the blood. And then when it goes chronic, it goes to the heart. And that's why it can be deadly, because when it gets to your heart and your digestive system, then that's really bad. But when it comes to the kissing bug, the pathogen in the bug is in the digestive system, particularly in the feces. And so that's how it gets around.
So talk more about that. Exactly. Why is it with the poop? I mean, insect poop and people don't normally mix together. So what is it that's happening? What is completing this vector cycle that you were referring to before?
Okay, so kissing bugs are a group of different species of assassin bugs that feed on blood. It's not like a direct transmission. So it has to do with their feces. So what happens? They're called kissing bugs because they feed at night and they feed really close to the face because that's what's exposed. And so they feed really close to the mouth, likely attracted to carbon dioxide like other blood feeders. And what they do is while they're feeding, they actually defecate on the person. And when the person wakes up or feels that feeling, they might rub in the feces into their skin. And that's how the parasite gets in. So really, it's about bug poop and getting into our system.
How rude.
Sounds gross.
They steal.
How rude.
They steal a kiss from you and they poop on your face. This is like the worst wake up experience ever.
So they feed on your blood, they poop on your face, and you can basically get sick because of it.
So when you said that it's a group, though, is that part of what fuels this interest and this confusion? Because it sounds like there could be kissing bugs anywhere. Are all kissing bugs at risk of being part of this transmission cycle? Should we worry about all of these kind of blood-stealing assassin bugs?
So there are 130 species of trichomine assassin bugs worldwide, and that's the subfamily that are the kissing bugs. There's multiple genera in this group. All but like 9 of them are restricted to the Americas, and those last 9 are in Southeast Asia, I believe. So the majority of trichomine kissing bugs are in the Americas, where Chagas disease is present. I was mistaken. There's also one species of pantropical kissing bug that gets in Africa. So I was incorrect in saying they were only in the New World in Asia. There's one African species. There's a paper by Byrne et al. From 2011 that is, if you start getting questions about Chagas and T. cruzi in the U.S., it is a great overview because it goes over every trichoma vector in the U.S.
What journal is it?
Clinical Microbiology Reviews. Trypanosoma cruzi, the causative agent of Chagas disease, is present in the United States, in Central America, and South America. In the U.S., we've got 11 species of kissing bugs. One is widespread in the eastern U.S., Trichoma sanguisuga, the eastern cone nose. And the other 10 species are found primarily in the Southwest and in Texas. So we've only got one in Kentucky, in Nebraska. It's not reported in Pennsylvania yet, but it's known from neighboring states. So if we get it, it might be in like southern tier counties. So it might be here, probably not. But there's one widespread species in the east. All of the species in the United States can get Chagas. It's been sequenced from them using DNA.
They don't necessarily have Chagas. They have the pathogen. So they
have the pathogen that causes Chagas. They transmit it between animal hosts. But unlike the species that transmit Trypanosoma cruzi to people in primarily Central and South America, the ones that poop on your face, if you happen to be bitten by a kissing bug in the United States, the 11 species we have here don't defecate while they're feeding. They defecate typically 15 minutes or more after they finish feeding. So they bite you, they feed, they move away, and then they poop somewhere else. So that Trypanosoma laden feces doesn't get on your face. There's little risk of wiping it on you. And so because of that, there have only been something like 6 or 7 recorded cases of Chagas transmission from native kissing bugs in the United States ever. It can happen. It has happened. There is an infinitesimally tiny risk that it could happen again, but it's not like Central America where there's 6.2 million people that have it. I wouldn't be concerned about Chagas transmission in the U.S. I can't say it doesn't happen because it has, but it is so rare. And even so, there's about 120 trichomine regivids in North and South and Central America. Only 13 of those are major Chagas vectors. So it's even a subset of kissing bugs that are really the vectors transmitting Chagas to people.
It sounds like it is a much more serious issue down in South America and Central America. Mike, I know you have gone down to Central America at least before. What was your experience down there with Chagas? Did you collect these insects? Do you have Chagas? I don't know.
So I've been to Costa Rica 3 times. It is one of my most favorite places to visit. And yeah, I've seen multiple kissing bugs while there. I've collected a couple. And if I ID'd them correctly, they are Chagas vectors. I've always thought it would be neat to screen them for Trypanosoma cruzi because they're in ethanol. I thought about that when I collected them even as an undergrad. I just have never done so. I was in not quite field stations when I collected them. It was more, but it was certainly rural. I'm picturing a place in my head and I cannot remember exactly where it was. It's on the label though. But yeah, it was more rural and, you know, they were just often at the lights outside doors at night, like porch lights and that kind of thing. Like I could see if you were living in a little bit more of a rustic type habitation, if you have a thatched roof or, you know, no window screens, how these things could easily come indoors at night to bite people.
Were you worried about that at all?
No, I wasn't. We had decent buildings. They were pretty well shut. Like some things got in, but I wasn't too worried about it.
Is it something they talk about down there, though?
I don't remember hearing anything from anybody about Chagas. Like, I was on the lookout for them because I knew they were there, but
I do have a friend that was in Belize, and when she returned, she said that it was very interesting to see public health messages displayed about Chagas. She said it really made her aware of the realities of living there for people there. So it's interesting. It's like when I first moved to Indiana to go to Purdue and everything was about tornadoes. I was like, what? Where did I move to? It's where I was from. Like, we never had tornadoes. So it's those kind of things, realizing the locals have different realities. I do not have Chagas disease. I am a frequent blood donor. And that is one of the questions that's on the survey I get every time I go to donate platelets. It's, you know, have you ever had Chagas disease? Because it is in the blood. And that is another way you can get it from organ donation, blood transfusions, or, you know, needles. So it's something they screen. If I was ever tested positive, they evidently would let me know and I would never be able to donate blood again. So that's good that, you know, someone's monitoring my blood for me.
So there are other ways that you can get it though. It's not just by having a very rude insect poop on your face. You can get it from a blood transfusion is what you're saying. Are there other routes?
It's also been shown to pass from a pregnant woman to her baby, so congenital transmission. And there are cases in Latin America of consumption of uncooked food that are contaminated with feces from infected bugs. So
that sounds almost worse than getting bit on the face. Because, like, I guess I just expect them to bite me on the face because that's what they do. But like now they're pooping in my food.
Right. Why do you got to contaminate my mango for? It sounds like, so we've all gotten some questions on this before. I know that one thing that used to pop up when I was in a county office was there would be people that would bring me bed bugs and they were very concerned about the bed bugs vectoring Chagas disease. Have either of you ever had that experience or that kind of conversation?
I have done a few presentations actually when people ask if bed bugs transmit disease to humans, and there are quite a few studies that are out there right now. And if bed bugs can transmit a pathogen, that's actually one of the ones in the running to be able to be transmitted. But I think very similar to what Mike said about pooping, if bed bugs aren't going to poop on their host, then there's not going to be a chance to be exposed to it or to have it, you know, enter the body. With the kissing bug, I believe they can feed like 20 to 30 minutes. So they do feed for a long time compared to bed bugs. I found that they can just feed for like 5 to 10 minutes and be done.
Right. They're, you know, tanked up, ready to go.
Yeah, they're done. Kissing bugs are rather large. I don't know if anyone wants to describe what these look like or if we're going to go into that.
I think that that's kind of a good segue into talking about things that get misconstrued as being a kissing bug. So if we were going to talk about the gestalt of a kissing bug, they are an assassin bug, and assassin bugs do have a shape to them. I think that assassin bugs are kind of easy to pick out of a lineup. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, or at least things that look like assassin bugs.
Right. The false assassin bugs. So yeah, what is it about them that is different than some of the other hemipterans? They all have that needle-like mouth part and everything, but what is it that makes these assassin bugs look unique?
Assassin bugs have a variety of body shapes to them. There are a number that have like long spindly legs or kind of sort of look like walking sticks with, you know, grasping forelegs. But there's a whole number of them that are much stouter than that. They often have beefy forelegs that they'll use to overpower their prey and a very stout piercing sucking mouth parts that they then jab into the prey and use to feed on them. So that looks pretty distinctive. Many species also have like a flared abdomen to it. The wings don't fully cover the sides of the abdomen and they kind of like come up on the sides.
Yeah.
And John, you've got a name for that, don't you?
I think they look like love handles. That's what I always told the master gardeners was if you see a bug with love handles in your garden, it's probably a friendly one. It's probably a good one to have around. It's an assassin bug that's helping you. And we got lots of assassin bugs out there. We got the wheel bug, which is a big, impressive-looking predator. Got a big cog on its back. It helps to control some of those Japanese beetles out there. They're not an unknown group.
Wheel bugs are pretty distinctive. I get
jagged ambush bug.
Yeah, jagged ambush bugs. Those are common.
And they're cute. They're so cute.
There's lots of them out there. We've got the jagged ambush bugs. We got the wheel bugs.
I get zealous a lot too because we're in kind of a wooded type area. They're more woodland regivids, but they come in the garden often. They're green. They're pretty cool looking.
So it's a big group, but then as part of a subcategory in this group, we have the kissing bugs. So they have some of those same characteristics that we've described, right?
They do, but they also have, some of them are called cone noses because while most assassin bugs kind of have like a rounded front to the face, cone noses have this protuberance off the front of the head that looks like a cone nose.
That's a good word.
It's a defining characteristic for the subfamily. I mean, I feel like they're pretty distinctive, but given the number of clients that send me all other sorts of hemipterans and honestly non-hemipterans as well, maybe they're only distinctive to me. A lot of people seem to confuse other things with kissing bugs.
So what are some of those commonly confused with kissing bug insects?
Here in the fall, it's primarily Western conifer seed bugs, which are a species of leaf-footed bug, family Horaeidae. The easiest way to tell them from kissing bugs is most leaf-footed bugs, including Western conifer seed bugs, have these big flares or flanges on the hind legs, hence leaf-footed bug. And they do kind of look like leaves. And that is a good way to distinguish that whole group from assassin bugs and kissing bugs in particular. And honestly, they get into houses in the fall. They overwinter as adults and they look for protected places to hibernate or overwinter. And they come indoors all the time in the fall. And so people will call me thinking they have this infestation of kissing bugs all of a sudden. And No, it's just fall and the Western conifer seed bugs have come to sleep.
They've come to roost.
I was going to say that, but I don't want to say roost.
One of the things that is interesting to me is with that one in particular and with some of the other ones is I think it has a lot to do with the stripes along the edge of the abdomen that are kind of on those love handles that I was joking about before. The kissing bugs have noticeable stripage on the sides of their body, right, Jody?
They're all different species, but the ones that we would probably have here, the eastern blood-sucking conos. See, this sounds like, do you think these get more attention? You know how, you know, we've gone and we've done the murder hornet thing? These are assassin bugs, and this is the blood-sucking cone nose. Like, this sounds kind of bad.
Yeah, sounds terrifying. But they,
like, now that we're talking about it. But this species, it's got some, like, red markings on it. So those flanges that you talked about are those love handles. There's, like, these six, I would say, like, triangles or orange reddish spots going down each of the sides. I mean, it's kind of pretty, but I know there are other ones that are not as colorful and may have some like stripes, but there's kind of some orange coloration.
Right. And then that Western conifer seed bug has the stripes on the side. I used to get a lot of squash bugs that were brought to me that people thought were kissing bugs because they have that same kind of stripage, that same hemipteran profile. Any others that you've seen come into the office, Jody?
Box elder bugs, large milkweed bugs, probably too. Yeah, I mean, I guess there are some things that people can confuse them with.
I don't get those so much, but I do get Rejuvius personatus, the masked hunter.
That sounds fun.
I don't know that one.
Okay, they occur in Nebraska and Kentucky. So it's an introduced species. They're from Europe originally. But like a lot of introduced species, they like to be in around houses. So you get them in houses a lot, and they do bite people, and it's very painful because they're assassin bugs biting people. People will get those in their houses occasionally and ask if it's a kissing bug because, again, it's got that hemipteran profile. They are a regivid, so they're even a type of assassin bug.
They're really sleek. Like they're not as flangy. Like they're like black. And then when I look up mass hunter, is that the same thing as like the bugs that put stuff on their bodies?
Oh yeah, is immatures? Yeah. Yep.
That's adorable. So they go from like camouflaged with our dust bunnies to biting us?
Yeah, I mean they bite in defense. They're not looking for a blood meal.
Okay.
But so around humans a lot, and so the chance for a bite is increased compared to like a wheel bug.
Whoa, I kind of like these little pictures of the immatures.
they cover themselves in wax and dust and they're cute. I think one thing people don't understand about kissing bugs too is they're pretty big for like insects we have in North America. Like they get to 8/10 of an inch long, and a lot of like Western conifer seed bugs aren't even half an inch. And so they're honestly a lot bigger than a lot of the things people are mistaking for kissing bugs as well. But again, it's hard to like tell how big an insect is from a photo, and I think that screws people up. But also, given the number of people that have claimed cicada killers are 4 inches long, I also don't think a lot of people are very good at estimating the size of most insects.
That seems fair.
I would agree with that.
So there are some other websites that have talked about this. It looks like there's one from Texas A&M, kissingbug.tamu.edu. And they mentioned that people have brought them what looks like some rough stink bugs, eastern-eyed click beetles, which is a big bug. I could see where you would think a big bug, maybe a kissing bug, wheel bugs, a lot of weevils. I can see where you'd think a weevil maybe had a piercing, sucking mouth part. How about you?
Yeah, I can see that, especially if it's got like a real obvious rostrum to it.
Nice rostrum. You're breaking out all the vocab words today. I'm proud of you.
I try.
But when you find these things, if you're confused about what it is, you can use resources like this Texas A&M website that I just mentioned. We'll link to that in the show notes. You can also send a photograph to your local university, your land-grant university, to see if they can help you figure out what it is, or take it to your cooperative extension office in your county, and maybe they can help you figure out what insect you found. But even if it does turn out that you found a type of kissing bug in your home or near your home and maybe even been bitten by it, Would you guys say that the kind of final point to our story here is that you shouldn't necessarily panic?
Yeah, absolutely don't panic. I would be more inclined to be aware of this, especially if you were born in Latin America or grew up there or been traveling there, like something to be aware of. But here, I wouldn't be too concerned about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're vacationing or traveling for whatever reason to Central and South America, like, be aware that it's there, because as you know, doctors in the United States typically aren't going to link, if you do pick it up there, like signs and symptoms of Chagas disease and figure out what that is, unless you tell them like, oh, I was in South America. So if you're traveling, certainly be aware that it's there, that you could get it. Brush up on signs and symptoms of getting it in that case. But catching it in the United States is just, it's so unlikely, it borders on never going to happen. I mean, obviously it has like half a dozen times, but it's so rare. I just don't see it.
Yeah, definitely. If you've been bit by any insect or arthropod, if you have access to it, put it in a bag and have it identified, because that will definitely save you the time of going to a doctor and getting tested for, you know, an illness. It's much easier to ID the bug. And if the bug is definitely not a kissing bug or in that family, then that will rule that out. But if things are caught early, I believe there are anti-parasitic drugs that can help. It can be a terrible disease, but it can also, if caught early, like most things, then there are treatments.
You got options. So thanks for tuning in to listen and learn a little bit about Chagas disease as well as kissing bugs here with us today. We hope you've enjoyed. And if you want to help the show out, you can find us on the web. We are at arthro-pod.blogspot.com. We're also on Twitter, arthro_podshow. We're also on all of your different favorite podcatcher apps that are out there. If you want to help us, send us an idea through one of those platforms for a future show, or reach out and let us know if you'd like to be a guest, or if you just could leave a comment and rating. It also helps to get the word out about Arthropod and get more people to listen to it. So we would appreciate that. You can also find your hosts on Twitter. I'm at BugmanJohn.
I'm at Jody Bugsme, UNL.
And I'm at MScavarla36.
We thank you for tuning in, and catch us in another couple of weeks with another entomology podcast extravaganza.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.